Hello and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. Big Wednesday show coming up for you with J.R. Jackson.
Yo, I feel like it's been more than a week. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. Were you here last week? Yeah, I think you were.
Apparently, I'm forgettable.
But we're glad to have you here. And in particular, because we do have to, just briefly, it's the beginning of the show, and I'll give you an idea of what's coming after, but we are going to be touching base with Donald Trump's rally last night. And the reason is, I wanted to see, is he going to address the IG report? Is he going to address impeachment? And if not, what is he going to focus his attention on? And so it went crazy, and so we're going to be following up on that. But we also have a candidate who's going to be joining us a little bit later, is running in Georgia's 4th district. And then beyond that, we've got some legal developments with Donald Trump's foundation settlement over their fraud. We've got details on that. New information about what officials looking into contaminated water in Flint knew months and months before the public knew. We've got Tucker Carlson bringing on another racist guest to attack AOC. And then a new monument in Virginia, very close to where some Confederate statues are. But this one's a little bit different, so we're going to be showing that to you to close out the show. But with that, why don't we jump right into the insanity?
I'm ready.
Last night, Donald Trump had one of his rallies, and he talked about a lot of things. And the first is, he did not talk specifically about what happened at the NATO meeting with world leaders laughing behind his back about him, but he did talk about laughter. So let's listen in.
I always say, and I've already said it twice tonight, this country is so respected, and we were not respected 4 years ago. We were laughed at. But while we're delivering historic victories.
Yeah, historic victories. So we were being laughed at, but now we are respected. I mean, look, you know, it was the NATO thing. He was laughed at the, was it the UN meeting?
The UN General Assembly meeting.
I mean, here's the thing. If you're a Trump supporter, you can say it wasn't appropriate for the UN to laugh in that way. Like, you know, he's a world leader. Give him some respect when he's doing a speech. And Trudeau and Macron, I think, come off as kind of catty and a little bit small. Mm-hmm. But they were clearly laughing at him. And if that's a thing that you say you care about, it seems like you would factor that into your conversation about world leaders laughing at us.
This is where, you know, we talk about how Emma with T by T, is it Politics Investigates, one of them.
Revelation.
She goes and she talks to people at Trump rallies.
Yes.
And the question, the constant question, and this is the reason why I couldn't do it. I'm giving her props for being able to keep her cool. But the question you'd have to ask every person that walks out of there says, do you remember when the president said that we don't get laughed at? Did you miss the story about the UN? Did you miss the story about NATO? Did you miss the part about when he said that we don't get laughed at anymore, yet he was, when he acknowledged it at the UN General Assembly? Did you miss Fox News? Okay, fine, you watch Fox News because they hit it. By the way, when he got laughed at the UN, they played a clip and cut it off before the laughter happened, by the way.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Did you miss the part this time at the NATO one when Laura Ingraham, because you must watch that, right? Because everything else is fake news. Did you miss the part when Laura Ingraham said it's good that he got laughed at? That it's a win for him? Which one is it? Which narrative are we going to follow? That we don't get laughed at, that we only got laughed at 8 years ago and no longer get laughed at, or that it's good that we do get laughed at because we get laughed at?
So is it good when Obama was being laughed at even though he wasn't being laughed at?
Which one is it?
Yeah, and it's not even so...
Go ahead. No, I'm...
Yeah, it's not even so much like, hey, I think you should be consistent. We're years past that. There's not going to be any of that. I just want to know, what do you actually value? Because when you say here's a thing that would be good, it implies that you want that thing. But if it's entirely contingent on who, what, where, when, and how, I'm trying to drill down to know what you actually want. And so, do you think it's a good thing for countries around the world to respect and admire the United States? I think it's a good thing, but you don't have to. If you don't think that that's necessary, then that's fine. You can explain why. But we were more, I mean, you can just look at the polls of citizens in countries around the world. We were clearly more respected and admired. People had a more favorable opinion of the United States under Barack Obama. That has gone down. And yet you think now we're not being laughed at, now we're respected. But none of the evidence shows that. And I don't think that you really care about that, because in everything else when it comes to foreign policy, he says America first, forget all those people. We don't need their help, we don't need allies. So do you want them to like us and admire us and respect us and follow us, or don't you?
They don't know.
Maybe.
If you're flooded with constant nonsense, you don't really have an answer because it's just whatever fits the narrative for that particular 5 second span of your life. So then you'll spout out whatever it is that Laura Ingraham told you last week, and then you'll say what the president told you at this next rally. Whatever it is that fits the narrative, because there's no principle. That's what the basis for having an argument with someone has no principle. You give them facts and figures and principles and a reason and an agenda and something you want to get to a goal of. Their agenda is, you're mad, huh? Mm-hmm. We win. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's having an argument about something serious with a 2-year-old. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
I want to say on that, but we got a lot of videos that I want to get to. So at Trump's rally, there was a lot of projection over who is being laughed at, but also weird domestic projections. So he went on at length about Elizabeth Warren. We're not going to go through all of that, but there was one comment about something that happened in a live video of Elizabeth Warren's earlier this year, where I believe Donald Trump accidentally reveals quite a bit.
Did anybody see her beer deal where she said, oh, darling, you ever see that deal? Darling, it's about her husband. Darling, it's great to see you. What are you doing here? It's like, that's her husband. He's supposed to be living in the house. You're here. I don't think she's seen him in 10 years. Hey, I have an idea. Can I get a beer? Let's get a beer. You know, she wants to be one of the group. Hey, let's get a beer. Did you ever see such a phony, disgusting deal?
Okay, so it bothers Donald Trump for two people to be pretending to have a closer, more intimate relationship than they're actually having. As a family man, that cuts right to his core and he won't abide it. Come on.
We've seen the compilations, I've put them together, of Melania Trump slapping his hand away, get your hands off me, don't touch me, scowling at him, frowning when he turns his back. So, and also, how many marriages is this? Is this number 3?
I think it's number 3. Just fine. But here's the thing. You can have your third marriage, that's fine. But be a little bit more understanding, have a little bit more empathy for other people's relationships maybe. Or at the very least, if you're not gonna do that personally, you don't necessarily need to rant about it at a presidential rally.
Exactly. This is the thing, you can have your issues, you can be a bad husband, you can cheat on your wife and all that stuff, and that's your own personal business, I don't care. But I tell you what, Bill Clinton can't walk around and say, hey, you know, you guys need to stop getting these, having these affairs with other people.
Exactly.
I'm a principled person. No, you cheated on your wife, that's something you can't shame anyone else for. Now, by the way, the Elizabeth Warren thing with the beer summit and the thing on IG Live, whatever she was doing on, that was cringy.
It was, I agree.
But this is the thing, he gets in front of these people, he just rambles. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what can I say about Elizabeth Warren? Oh yeah, there was that beer summit thing.
Yeah.
And he has no idea the connection he's making with himself because they don't care.
Exactly, yeah, just say, hey, that seemed a little bit fake. And there was the Beto O'Rourke dentist thing. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see that. Yes, some politicians are really savvy with social media. You're not all AOC, let's just keep it real. You're not all AOC, so stop trying to be AOC. You can't necessarily all do it. But that's as far as the criticism should go. And honestly, there's one other thing that I think is underlying this. And I really wish, I don't want asserting that someone's projecting to be a crutch, but it really does seem like he's almost constantly projecting his own insecurities. Because there he said, what did he say? He said, well, honey, I'm surprised to see you. You live together, you should be there. Well, what's lurking in the back of Donald Trump's mind? He doesn't even live with his wife. And I'm not even talking about just that while he's in the White House, she's in New York, she's raising the kid. Totally reasonable. But it was just reported a couple of weeks ago that not only does Donald Trump in Trump Tower have a different bedroom than him, she has a suite of rooms on a different floor, which in regular person speak means she lives somewhere else. They're not even in the same floor of the same building. And that's fine if that's what you want.
Exactly.
But don't then criticize other marriages as not living up to your classic, you know, like old school American marriage that you have, where you live in DC and she lives somewhere off in a tower and you don't even have keys. It's just weird, okay?
Melania, let me in. He's like, Wilma.
Exactly. He referred to he was talking about Barron Trump and he was like, well, you know, Melania's got a son. And I mean, we've got kids. Don't criticize other people's families because you got one of the weirdest ones. Okay, with that, let's move on to something a little bit darker. As often happens at the Trump rallies, there were protesters. And at one point while he's speaking, a female protester said something, there was some sort of thing that happened, and she started to get taken out by security. And here is how Donald Trump handled it.
Get her out! Get her out! You see that? I'll tell you, law enforcement is so great. That particular guy wanted to be so politically correct. Oh. We don't want to be politically correct. I don't know who he was. He didn't do the greatest job. So they tried to frame innocent people.
Whew. So it would be bad enough. I'm just trying to imagine any other president, not candidate, president. Protesters getting taken out. Get her out of here. Get her out of here. Look, she's being taken out. Security's got her. She's not doing anything. She's just one regular woman. She's being taken out. Why are you barking like a madman? Mm-hmm. But then, of course, the other stuff.
Yeah, of course, the security's doing a bad job. You know, police officers are great, but that guy, I don't know what he was doing. So I watched the video of also what the security guy was doing. He wasn't touching her, but he was blocking her way and moving towards her.
Like herding her out.
Herding her out, exactly. Yes. And so as that went down, apparently that wasn't enough for Trump. So he's like, he needs to snatch her up, grab her by the neck. I'm not sure what he wanted to do. But we knew earlier in his original campaign how he was talking about how back in the days what we used to do to people that would do things in here. They'd be carried out on a stretcher.
Yep.
Absolute quote. That's what he likes. That's what he wants. He wants them to rough them up, bleed a little bit, which did happen at his rallies.
Exactly. And it's the president of the United States complaining that security is not being rough enough with a female protester. That's really weird, but it's not new. As you point out, his crowds are desperate for violence and for Trump to encourage violence. That's what they want.
And if you don't think whoever's part of that security firm or police officer, whoever that was that was doing it, is not going to reprimand that guy for upsetting the president, you're wrong.
Exactly. For doing his job.
Yep.
For getting someone out of there and not hurting them along the way. But this is the thing. And again, I mean, we haven't talked about the nature of the fascist cult of personality that's going on here in a while, but they have to see him as a person that will give them the ability, the authorization for violence. And that's why it goes to weird lengths. Like, I wasn't gonna talk about this, but the Thanos thing yesterday. Mm-hmm. Have you seen those movies? I don't even know if you've seen the movies.
Yes.
Okay, good. So
about the last one. No spoilers, John.
Okay,
it just came out.
I'm gonna be really loose, but his official Twitter campaign, like his campaign Twitter, put out a video with his head on the genocidal villain of the Marvel things.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything, but on the precipice of his
demise.
Non-victory, getting ready to kill half of all of the things that live in the universe. So not only is it a ridiculous cell phone that the guy was just about to lose, I don't want to spoil it, but it's that in that video, they edited in, so he murdered all of the Democratic leadership. And they loved it. All of his Twitter fans, yes, I wish he could snap his fingers and Nancy Pelosi would die and Schiff would die and Nadler would die and Schumer would die. I want him to kill his enemies.
Well, John, it's just a movie.
It is just a movie, that is true.
Except the fact that he has had people that go after and try and kill people that he's made his enemies in real life. That's the point.
Exactly, and so I would be a little bit more careful about that. Okay, can we jump to the last video? I know that we're over. I wanna do the last one. It's a classic, but we gotta bring it back. So this is gonna be the windmill thing. Donald Trump will literally never learn anything for the rest of his life. Greta Thunberg, now person of the year, was asked about why she wouldn't sit down with him and talk to him about climate change. She said it would be a waste of time. And I have video proof that that is the case. He has said a lot of stupid things about wind energy in the past. People have tried to correct him on that, tried to teach him. But as of last night, he's sticking with this.
You'd have windmills all over the place if you had crooked Hillary. They'd be knocking out those birds left and right. Those windmills, wah, wah, wah. Darling, I want to watch television tonight and there's no damn wind. What do? I want to watch the election results. Darling, there's no wind. The damn wind just isn't blowing like it used to because of global warming, I think. I think it's global warming.
There was a fan, I hadn't noticed it until now. There was a fan in a green camo hat who was laughing harder. I've seen some of the great comedians in person. Dave Chappelle came to my college, and the next morning my abs were killing me. I laughed so hard. I laughed less than that guy. Like, he's wind energy, clean energy, that's a great one, Don. And then he makes a joke about, because it's climate change. First of all, we label Donald Trump a climate denier because that's what he does in his speech. But at all of his seaside properties, they're preparing for climate change. He knows that it's happening. He knows the damage it's going to do. But he's lying to those poor people who trust him about this issue. And they love it. They couldn't be any happier. What a joke to make reliable, renewable, clean energy. Why would we ever want that?
And then the laughter is that stupidity. An absolute misconstruction of the entire process of what happens with wind energy and what windmills are. But just laugh at it. Like, the laughter should be belly laughing and head thrown back, because you're like, this guy is
at
this
him.
Dumb.
Those crowds should be full. Everywhere he goes, it should be full of people who are like, this guy thinks that this sort of idiocy would appeal to an actual potential voter. That's what should happen. In a good America, he would be being laughed at by people who are too smart. They lack the necessary gullibility to be drawn in by this sort of buffoonery. Yeah. But unfortunately, that's not the case. The one people who was smarter, who could see through it, she was dragged out. And Trump was only sad that it wasn't rougher. Okay, we do have to take a break. When we come back, a candidate is going to join us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now is a congressional candidate running in Georgia's 4th District, William Haston. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, John. How are you? Thanks.
I'm doing well, and we're very glad to have you here. I'd like to obviously I want to learn about your platform, your background. But to give people a little bit of an idea of what this race is going to look like, tell us a little bit about the 4th District and your experience there.
So the 4th Congressional District's about 750,000 people. We've got overwhelming Democratic support here. I think it's Democrat plus 24 as of the last election. So definitely a very great opportunity for progressives to have a giant voice within the Metro Atlanta area and across Georgia.
And so that's interesting, because I would say that generally the candidates we bring on are running in races that either lean or heavily Republican. So being in a bluer district, how does that shape the way that you're campaigning, the issues that you're raising, how you're differentiating yourself from the incumbent Hank Johnson?
Yeah. So for me, I am running as an unapologetic progressive. One of the biggest things for me is pushing those policies and not backing away from them. Kind of the pillars of our campaign as it stands right now are ending corruption, the Green New Deal, college for all, higher wages, and Medicare for all. We're not backing away from it. And I think that's really what differentiates us from the other two people and the incumbent, Hank Johnson, in our race, is that we're definitely running on progressive ideals and looking to aggressively pursue them when elected.
So I want to touch on some of those major policies you talked about, but you also mentioned ending corruption. And we saw that Hank Johnson, the incumbent, in this cycle, 95% of his donations come from PACs, which might well be some sort of record, actually. And so do you see that as a pretty fundamental part of your battle against corruption? And what is your philosophy for fundraising in this race?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, we have quite a bit of money in our race right now. I think it's close to close to $210,000 right now. A lot of that Hank has raised through definitely lots of large corporate donations. And so my approach to fundraising is one by one, calling, knocking doors, and really just pursuing a full grassroots movement. We have the groundswell here. We have people that are hungry for a representative that's going to go out and really fight for people, that's really going to listen and be responsive to folks, and not just someone that is Democrat in name and you know, looking out for those corporate interests and how they can further their political career, but somebody that really is responsive and is looking to really help make people's lives better in the end.
So as we talked about, it's a pretty liberal district. And so I'm curious, as you're campaigning, what are some of the issues that are resonating the most with the voters? And I'm also curious, your background, you spent 9 years in the Air Force. Are you finding that to be an advantage in this race?
A little bit. You know, I get the question a lot of, you know, why run against a reliable Democrat? And the answer that I continue to give is that, you know, if the Air Force taught me one thing, it's that when you go somewhere new and you see the problems, it's not to rest on your laurels and hope somebody changes it, but it's to really jump in and to get involved in the fight. And so when, you know, when we see people that are struggling day to day, you know, when I go to the grocery store is a good example. You know, folks will ask me, hey, can you just help me get a room for the night? And that tells me that there's some issue there that's deeper than just that immediate need. And that it is that income and wealth inequality really are issues here within our district. You know, we have a giant district because we have a lot of suburban and urban population density within one part of the district. And the other part of the district is just a sprawling suburban and rural area. And so we do have that income and wealth inequality that's kind of built in and gerrymandered into our district.
You know, we saw that you were with Cenk actually from TYT at the TYT Revolution Rally in Atlanta around the last Democratic primary debate. And so I'm curious, I know that you're obviously you're focused on your run, your eyes are on the House, but this is going on while we have this pretty contentious, big Democratic primary process going on. Are you doing any sort of endorsement during your run? Is there a particular candidate that you're pulling for or anything like that?
I, as being a progressive and really trying to push a progressive populist message, it'd be crazy for me not to tell you that I was 100% behind Senator Bernie Sanders. He is, you know, the kind of the inspiration behind my run, kind of always having the thought in the back of my mind, how to make this work without taking any big money was a question that I've kind of asked myself along the way several times. And it really is looking toward his campaign and looking toward how he's approaching things to say, you know, no more big money. We have to get the money out so that regular people, you know, regular people can really come in and take back our government, because as corporate interests will have it, they will milk it dry until there's nothing left. And to see his fight, you know, over the last 40 years now is just inspiring for me to know that, you know, if we keep pushing and we keep pulling and pulling and pulling and not taking crumbs, but taking huge radical change as much as we possibly can back for people, that it really, really is inspiring to see him do that.
William, it's JR. I was wondering, you talked about the diversity of your campaign, of your district, I'm sorry, and also the people you've spoken to. You're going out there and you're doing grassroots and you're knocking on doors. Have you found, because what's frustrating sometimes is sometimes Democratic or progressive campaigns will look at Republicans and think, oh man, they must not want anything that I'm proposing. Have you seen, as you're talking to people, even people who maybe not were always, wouldn't necessarily vote for someone that they would think from your background, that you've connected with them and they said, man, those things that you're talking about that seem so progressive and only for those libs actually work for me? Have you seen that coming around?
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of crazy that, you know, in working through the campaign here within the district, but also going back home to East Tennessee, where my wife and I are from, and talking to people there in a heavily, for all intents and purposes, just Trump country, and hearing people say, you know, that's radical, or that's, you know, that's a radical left idea. And then breaking it down to say, you know, if I'm trying to send your kids to college and you not have to, or they not have to be saddled with debt for the rest of their lives, yes, it's radical. And when we pose it in the way of, you know, we just want a little bit more money in your paycheck at the end of the month. We don't want you to have to worry about going to the doctor at the last second when, you know, you could have gone months and months ago to deal with the problems that you're having. You definitely see anybody across the political spectrum come around and it's more of a, you know, maybe somebody wasn't telling me the truth. Maybe somebody was intentionally misleading me to think that, you know, it is something, there's some other agenda aside from actually helping people to live better lives.
And William, where can people find out more about your candidacy?
It's williamhaston.com. It's H-A-S-T-O-N. We're also on all social media platforms at William4FORGA and the number 4 on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Okay, and that's for Georgia's 4th District. Thank you again for joining us today.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
We're gonna take a short break, but stick around, more after this. Historically, Donald Trump has not been a big fan of making good on his financial obligations, but we got news today that apparently for once he has. President Trump has paid $2 million to 8 charities. Hey, that sounds like good news. As part of a settlement in which the president admitted he misused funds raised by the Donald J. Trump Foundation to promote his presidential bid and pay off his business debts. That's not quite as good. It's sort of charitable giving, kind of. Now, his foundation put out a statement about this settlement, saying our case was amicably resolved weeks ago. The judge commended both parties for the resolution, the legacy of the Trump Foundation, which gave away many millions to those most in need at virtually no cost, is secure. And I agree. Now, let's talk about that legacy. As part of the settlement, Mr. Trump, who at first dismissed the suit as a political attack, made 19 detailed admissions acknowledging, for example, that the foundation had purchased a $10,000 portrait of himself that was ultimately displayed at one of his Florida hotels. He admitted that the foundation had given his presidential campaign control over about $2.8 million that the foundation had raised at a veterans fundraiser in Iowa in January 2016. Mr. Trump acknowledged the fundraiser was in fact a campaign event. They raised millions of dollars for veterans, and he had no intention of giving out until he was legally forced to.
The details behind that is when he was fighting with Megyn Kelly, and then he said, I'm not gonna do this debate on Fox News, it was in primaries. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing this debate on Fox News, I'm gonna go raise money for veterans and have a rally of my own, remember that? And he went and did that, and instead of actually raising money for veterans, what he did was raise money for himself. But so that principled stance of fighting against the fake news media coming after him for things that are unrelated to what he's doing actually went to line his own pockets on the backs of veterans. Mm-hmm. Think about that next time he says support troops or says our great veterans and we're gonna send them off where we're gonna bring them home. Think about that next time. The ones that are home, the ones that need these things is what he went and raised money off the backs of to make it seem like he was a principled person.
Yeah, and to the media, in the future when you say, oh, you know the vets, they always support Republicans. They support Republicans because Republicans support them. They're the pro-troop party. Okay, Trump says he has a 95% approval rating in the Republican Party. It's not true, but he has like an 88% approval rating. Mm-hmm. And every one of those people is fine with the fact that he stole millions of dollars from veterans, or at least tried to until he was caught and had to give it up.
So think about what he has stolen that he wasn't caught from doing. So let's see, there's a list of all these, the 8 organizations that got about $476,000 because he's a fraudster. The Army Emergency Relief, the Children's Aid Society, City Meals on Wheels, Given Hour, Martha's Table, United Negro College Fund, the United Way of National Capital Area, and United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Can I go to some of the real fast, some of the mission statements from each of these organizations? The Army Emergency Relief. They help soldiers and families every day with scholarships, grants, and loans that are always free and interest and free of interest and fees. He fraudulently took money from them or used them to make money. Children's Aid Society. Help children in poverty succeed and thrive. We do this by providing comprehensive supports to children, youth, and their families in targeted high needs New York City neighborhoods. Used them. Oh. City Meals on Wheels. Continuous lifeline and nourishing meals and vital companionship to our homebound elderly neighbors. Learn more about this. They deliver weekend, holiday, and emergency meals to frail New Yorkers and also give them a few hours of general companionship with a friend. Used them. Give an Hour is the name of this other group. They identified at-risk populations and other groups in need that can benefit from delivering services through a network of volunteer professionals. They focused on giving free mental health to active duty, National Guard, and reserve service members. He used them.
Yeah.
Martha's Table. They give, no matter where people live, they give children Quality education starting at 6 weeks of age, focused on literacy, social emotional development, health and wellness resources, family engagement, so they can have a chance at life. And this American dream he keeps talking about, America First, used them. United Negro College Fund. I've been the best president for African Americans, jobs, and everything else. They were looked to increase the total annual number of African American college graduates by focusing on activities that ensure more students are college ready, enroll in college, and persist to graduation. Used them. United Way of National Capital Area. They take people that are homeless, people who haven't had a chance at life, people who are thrown aside, and they give them a chance to do something more with their lives. He used them. And lastly, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's a living memorial to the Holocaust. It inspires citizens and leaders worldwide to convert hatred, prevent genocide, promote human dignity. Federal support guarantees that this museum is permanently in DC on the National Mall. Mm-hmm. So he used them because he's so against anti-Semitism, and he's so against Ilhan Omar, that anti-Semite, and he's so supportive of Israel, and we need more Americans that support Israel. Israel's not the only country in the world that has Jewish folks, by the way, but you may think that because you're dumb. So on top of that, he used them for his own benefit and his children's own benefit to line his pockets, pay off debts from things he screwed up as a businessman. He did this. So next time each of these groups, they say that he supports them, think about how he stole how much money from them and he had to give them $476,000 back because he's a fraudulent piece of garbage.
That's
the president that you support. Those groups, if you hate those groups, support this president. If you love those groups, you can't support this president because he hates those groups. He uses them for his own benefit. And after doing so, he tweeted, I won't settle this case, which he just settled. After doing it, says I won't do anything about it.
Well, I'm not going to try to add anything onto that. I think you summed up pretty much every one of the big issues with this.
Next time you wonder why people hate this president, ask why he hates everyone else.
Yeah.
That's who this president is.
Exactly. Okay, stick around. More to this. We've known for some time that the people of Flint were abandoned by those who should have helped protect them from horrible contamination of their water. But we're only now learning, thanks to an investigation by The Guardian, how much city officials knew about what was in the water literally months and months before people living in Flint actually found out about it. So let's run through a timeline right here. Flint began struggling with foul-tasting, discolored water after switching to the Flint River as its supply for water in April of 2014. Test results soon showed elevated levels of carcinogens. But there's this company, Veolia, which was brought on by the city to do tests of the water and to figure out what was actually going on. And email exchanges in February of 2015, the next year, between executives at that corporation and a city contractor show some senior employees were aware that lead from the city's pipes could be leaching into drinking water. They argued that city officials should be told to change Flint's water supply to protect residents. Sort of. But you'll remember, of course, in the history of this, that that's not what happened. So let's take a look at what we know. One email from the vice president of development, Rob Nichols, in February 9th, 2015 says, "Do not pass this on. The city, however, needs to be aware of this problem with lead and operate the system to minimize this as much as possible and consider the impact in future plans. We had already identified that as something to be reviewed." So you look at that and you think, okay, wow, it's scary that they knew about the lead, but it also implies that they want to make the city aware of it so that they can change the water supply and protect people. The response to that email was, yep, lead seems to be a problem, which is a bit casual, but whatever. It seems to be agreeing that it is an issue. Here's the thing though. Days later, Bill Fahey, the technology vice president, emailed senior executives calling for the company to advise Flint to change its water supply, adding that the politics of this should not get in the way of making the best recommendation. Reiterating the call in another email, he added, please, this will come back and bite us. Veolia said it nonetheless warned city officials about the possibility of lead contamination and that the city resisted discussions of changing its water supply. Veolia said it warned then Mayor Dane Walling about how the corrosive water could cause lead to leach from the pipes and raise corrosion in a final public report to the city on the 18th of March. That's 1 month after those emails we saw. But that report did not disclose the possibility for lead contamination, focusing instead on how corrosion could be causing water discoloration. So there's internal emails saying we've got to let people know about this. Even this could come back to bite us. They say they in fact did tell the city, but the report that they say proves they did that proves nothing of the sort. Now, in a 20-page response to questions from The Guardian, Veolia argued that city and state officials caused crisis and that they're now trying to create a corporate villain where one does not exist, okay? But bear in mind some of what they were sharing back when this should have been revealed to the public. Veolia's interim water quality report presented on 18 February, so about a week after those emails, said, safe equals compliance with state and federal standards and required testing. Latest tests show water is in compliance with drinking water standards. An MLive article in the presentation was headlined, despite quality problems, your water is safe. And so, look, they knew, some in the company were saying we have to tell people. And now, looking back on that time, they're saying we did everything right, we warned people. But all of the documented evidence shows that they did nothing of the sort.
Well, it's obvious first they knew what was happening. Mm-hmm. And they start on the right track of, hey, we got to do something about this. And the fact that you even have to bring up, there's a lot of hints in there, the way that this politics was brought forward. The fact you have to bring up and say, hey, you guys, let's get past the politics and actually do something. Why is it that doing the political approach is doing nothing? The political approach is saying, oh my God, there's gonna be a crisis on our hands, but let's not do anything. And then this one particular advisor comes in and says, hey, you know what? Let's maybe not do the political thing and actually help out the people that elected us or helped or that we're overseeing and looking out for their lives. That's the political approach, is to do nothing. And you have to go outside of the political approach to actually do your job. Yeah. So why is that the case?
Well, that individual that you referenced, it was coming at it from sort of a weird position where he thought that the people and the kids of Flint drinking lead contaminated water was a bad thing.
Crazy.
Weirdo. And that, of course, happened and negatively impacted the health of any number of different people. Some of them, because they were young when they were drinking that water, they will suffer the effects of that for the rest of their life. That's locked in now. I will add one other fact, probably not connected to anything, just something to bear in mind. On the 19th of February, so a little bit later after those emails, Veolia's communications vice president, Scott Edwards, said in an email that work already underway in Flint could lead to a $15 million to $30 million annual contract. But that probably didn't matter. That didn't influence anything.
I mean, that's their job.
Make millions of dollars.
That's when it's their job.
Yeah,
and look, that gets made.
This is literally the first time that I've heard about this corporation's investigation there. I don't know anything about their history. They seem to have known, and they certainly should have warned people, because half a year went by before people were warned about the lead, let alone the fact that years and years would go by before they ever had access to clean water, of course, as a matter of, you know, regular access to water. But it's also the city officials too. It was a horrible business focused decision to make to switch over the water in the first place. So look, it's a combination, as it almost always is, of the government screwing over its people, corporations working with the government to screw over those people, and it's all in the end to make money.
It's a corporate controlled government, and it's highlighted every time. And until you understand that and not trust them based off of those things and not go after saying, oh man, and the government's out to get us. The government's out to help certain people, the ones that they consider worthwhile to help. And that's why there's a problem with this uprising of people that want to stop the way the government is usually coming after them. And it's getting bitter now.
And the government knew too. I mean, I don't remember exactly which documentary it was in, but maybe you remember. But you remember the fact that was revealed that the city had access to the water from this source that was clearly, it was corrosive, it was gonna corrode the pipes and all that. But was it the GM plant had access to water from a different source because they didn't want to use that water because it was corroding the engines that they were washing with it? But they were okay giving it to people?
Yep.
I mean, this is like, the last 50 years, this is one of the most egregious derelictions of duties, both by corporate executives in pursuit of profit, but also the government, who didn't care at all about the obvious negative health impacts that this would have on people, so they could save a pittance, a little bit of money.
It's the same way. If you ask any of these rich folks, sometimes politicians, to live in certain areas that maybe have contaminated, bad air quality, water, they won't live there. Like, are you kidding me? I'm not moving my family in there. That's dangerous.
Exactly. Okay, we're gonna take a short break, a little bit more after this. Despite mounting popular opposition, Confederate War Memorial statues to generals and others who were involved in the Civil War, they're all over the South still. And actually just this week, the South got a new statue, but it's a little bit different. Take a look. You'll see this picture, that's not in the South. It had been on display in Times Square in September. It is now a permanent installation in Richmond. And that is not a Civil War general. That statue is called Rumors of War. It was built by Kehinde Wiley, widely known for painting the official portrait of President Barack Obama. After spending several weeks on display in Times Square, it was unveiled in his permanent home outside the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. It is a three-story tall statue. Wow. And notably, it is less than a mile away from another statue of Jeb Stuart, a very well-known Confederate general. We'll have that picture for you in just a little bit. The museum wrote that the new sculpture commemorates African-American youth lost to the social and political battles being waged throughout our nation. The museum curator said it is monumental and not just a figure of speech. It is truly monumental in terms of its ability to be a seismic shift in how we perceive and how we understand ourselves as people living here. I think that's a nice way of mixing it up.
Yeah.
If people in the South just love statues, then let's have statues that commemorate people who weren't generals in the South in the Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see, I mean, as time goes on, you know, how they're revered and looked at, this one specifically like this, and I hope that it starts a trend, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as you said, this is a statue that isn't necessarily of one particular named person.
Yeah, exactly.
But a representation of how many people had to go through so much.
Yes.
But, you know, so as maybe as this goes on, we can build some statues that have some specific people that we can remember. Because there's heroes that get built.
Mm-hmm.
And we have names attached to these guys. And a lot of them were bad guys before that many of these statues are coming down.
Yeah.
Let's build up some heroes for names that we don't always remember and that need to get taught in schools.
Exactly.
And this is part of it. And as you mentioned, if we love statues, if statues get us to remember people, then let's remember some good people.
Exactly. And then not just generals. Honestly, like, can we have a scientist? How about a singer, honestly? Have statues of people who weren't known for being particularly good at killing people. And we're going to get to one of those in just a second. So Kehinde Wiley, who made the statue, said, "This story begins with my seeing the Confederate monuments. What does it feel like if you are black and walking beneath this? We come from a beautiful fractured situation. Let's take these fractured pieces and put them back together." And as I alluded to in the beginning of the story, that statue is less than a mile away from a Confederate statue. And so let's turn to that now. That is Confederate General J.E.B. or Jeb Stuart. I don't know if he prefers J.E.B. or Jeb. I don't really care. Now look, I read the Wikipedia entry on Jeb Stuart. I'm sure if you live in the South, you already know who this is. There's been a lot of portrayals in movies and all that stuff. Apparently he's known as the greatest cavalry tactician in America's history. And that tactical genius, what did he use it for? To help try to maintain slavery in the South. That's what he did. Maybe he was really great at it. And like once he used scouts in a way that let him get around a Union army, and it was really awesome. And what did he do all of that for? Because he wanted to drive those armies out so that they could have slavery until the end of time. And so like at the end of the day, yeah, he was really good on a horse. I don't care. What were you using your talents for?
And let's keep it real, in a losing effort. So I always point that out.
In a losing effort to tear the country apart.
Yeah, this guy is a tactical genius. You know, there's guys in NBA and NFL that are great players that never won a championship. But we'll always say, Charles Barkley, huh, where's the ring? Where's the ring? That's what we'll live with him forever. Where's the ring, Jeb? I'm just pointing out, why are we building statues of losers now? Point it out, we built statues of losers, we made heroes out of losers.
Yeah.
Straight up.
And look, and I know, he's probably still got living descendants or whatever, and so you look back and think, it's amazing, great. I know, you're gonna be proud of your family or whatever. But here's the thing, even back then, lots of people knew that what was happening was 100% wrong. That's one of the reasons we had this war. There were people in the South who defected and worked for the North. Anyone could have done that. They could have used some great cavalry tacticians as well. Anyway, I don't want to focus too much on that. I'm just saying that if we're going to commemorate those sorts of people, how about the people who are actually struggling? We're just trying to survive in a country that has abandoned them in a lot of different ways. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, as always, for joining me.
Fun times.
Great to have you here.
We're
going to have a little bit of overtime. So if you're a member, you're going to be able to watch this live. If not, tyt.com/John. You can become a member during the break super fast. You can catch it live. We've got a little bit more after this. We'll be right back. Just in case you need a reminder that Tucker Carlson has his show with only one goal in mind, advancing white supremacy. He had a guest on yesterday who decided to attack the district of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in this way.
We're connoisseurs of irony on the show, but if you claim to care about the environment, you think that the little piece of America you're responsible for, that you represent in the Congress, would be clean, but hers isn't. Why?
Well, part of the reason is because her district is actually one of the least American districts in the country. And by that, I don't mean that it's not part of America, but it's occupied by relatively few American citizens. A very high percentage of her district is, in fact, illegal aliens. Now, the way they inhabit housing there is such that they live in a lot of illegal spaces, like basements, and many people live there. So they wind up producing a lot of garbage that the landlords don't want thrown out normally. So hence, you wind up with a lot of garbage on the streets. You have illegal food vendors pouring their pig grease into the gutters. Yeah, I mean, I worked out there. It can be a little gross.
One of the best things about covering Tucker Carlson videos is Tucker Carlson's face while his guests are talking is always exactly what mine is, but not for the same reason. The guy's talking, and I'm, come to me for 1 second. The guy's talking, and I'm just like, and that's what Tucker's doing, except not correcting him, because let's be very clear. That guest, Seth Barron, editor for the conservative City Journal, says that it's un-American because it has a low percentage of American citizens, so all illegal aliens. That, you might have noticed, he provides no evidence for that. That's because that's just a thing that he's saying. There was like one thing that said that there were a large percentage of foreign-born people living there. That does not mean that they're illegal aliens. It doesn't mean they're undocumented in any fashion. It doesn't mean that they're not citizens. But he likes the idea that that's why places are dirty. And Tucker Carlson has previously said that bringing in immigrants makes us poorer and dirtier. Those were his words.
Well, you know, whenever you present facts to racists, it doesn't work out because everything they say is based in ignorance. That's the whole point. You can't hate someone for no reason or for just for who they are unless you have no reason or ignorance behind who they are. So, like, just because of simply, it's foreign-born people, so they must be filthy. They must be dirtier. They must throw their garbage on the street. You know, Americans, oh, man. Americans that were maybe born here or maybe you have the right skin tone that became citizens, they don't throw garbage on the streets. No, there's no litter anywhere else. Oh, and only in this district is where there's garbage and homelessness and immigration. Only in those districts, only in Democratic districts. So if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets voted out and your guy's in, will the garbage be up off the streets suddenly? Will that particular representative come in and clean everything up? Mm-hmm. What is it that she's doing? What policies is she backing? Because she's one congresswoman. What policies is she backing that will suddenly have garbage be lifted off the streets and rise up into the sky?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say, will he come in and clean up the garbage? Because that is almost literally what Tucker says AOC should do. We got a little bit more for you.
Leaving aside the question of the immigration status of the people there, as you well know, I think it's a really important question. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not that hard to pick up garbage off the street of your own congressional district. How can we take seriously anything she says about the environment when this is her congressional? She should be ashamed of this.
Okay,
it's all fake. He doesn't believe
there's
that.
Like six different frauds being perpetrated on his audience right there. So putting aside the question of their citizenship status, because I suspect that you're just spouting off BS, but I don't want to focus on it. So let's just move on. I'm not going to ask a follow-up question about where you're getting this information on, because I don't care about what the truth is. I'm a propagandist. I'm trying to convince people to support white supremacy. And so leaving aside that, how can I trust what she says we should do in terms of our national energy production policy if she's not literally going around with a stick and bindle picking up trash off the street? She should be ashamed.
Again,
that was delivered as if it was a serious analysis of the situation.
The two things do not have to connect for them to say it. As long as you say it with anger and vitriol and say, oh man, I can't believe they're not doing this, then it's accepted because that audience, it doesn't matter. The audience that's watching that disagrees with halfway through that went, oh my God, two racists, and turned off the TV. The ones who are buying it and taking it all in are like, yes, that's right. They're saying the racist things that I believe. I like this. It's backing up my racist tendencies. It's all it is. And that's why it grows. You're like, oh man, there's legitimacy behind my horrible beliefs.
Yeah. You know what?
That's the agenda.
I think it's amazing that they always pretend as if they don't all live in New York, by the way. Tucker, if you, it's your area, you're an American citizen. Why don't you pick up some of the trash? How about that?
Go down to the subway, Tucker.
Exactly. Why don't we? Have you ever walked through New York and you find yourself accidentally walking past the Fox News studios? It's weird. Let's check to see how much trash is outside of their studios, because there's a lot of good conservatives who walk from their private limo to the door every day. If there is one speck of trash, you should be ashamed, Tucker Carlson.
Absolutely.
But again, just to focus on this, they hate the coastal elites. Who do they listen to? Fox News, all of whom live in New York. Ben Shapiro lives in LA. Like, all these people are like, you guys, you don't understand the middle of the country. You forget about them. That's why we flee it as fast as we can to go live on the coast. I don't even care which. I'll go west, I'll go east. I am getting out of the center of the country. Now, I don't actually believe that, but that's how they all act. Rush Limbaugh lives in the heartland of coastal Florida. All of them. It's a scam that they're perpetrating on their audience and in pursuit of something, because of course the entire point of that segment is you shouldn't trust AOC, who's trying to pass policies that will benefit you financially, in terms of your health, all of that, the environment, because something immigrants are dirty. That's the level of analysis you get from Tucker Carlson. And he cloaks it in all these ways. He tries to convince people that he's some kind of populist or something like that. It is all a scam. He is pushing nothing but racism and xenophobia.
And one more time, they keep going with the back and forth. There's never a principled view on people they hate. AOC was just this coffee shop bartender, whatever they call her all the time. Oh, she was this waitress, and so that lowers her status. But she's also an elitist. Mm-hmm. Which one is it? And by the way, all the people they're talking to, these poor racist white folks, they're the right skin tone that they want to support them. If these supporters, they show up at Tucker Carlson's door, they show up at Rush Limbaugh's door, if they show up at this a-hole's door and knock and go, hey, you know, it's kind of filthy over here. Can you help me out, Tucker? He'll be like, oh my God, somebody get this trash off my front my front step. Security, because they don't like you either.
No.
They're using you.
Yeah, and it's sad that it works, unfortunately. Okay, that's all we've got for the show. Thank you for sticking around, and especially sticking around for the overtime. Really appreciate that. JR, thank you once again. For the rest of you, we will see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.